Hello and welcome to this podcast from Don't Forget the Bubbles. If you enjoy our podcasts, please tell your colleagues and subscribe on iTunes and Spotify. Enjoy.
Hi there. My name's Damien Rowland, and I'm back for the second of what is probably going to become a COVID catch-up type of podcast. And I'm going to use the acronym COVID for communication, organisation, vital signs, interventions and dilemmas, just to guide the stream of consciousness that I've been thinking of during the last week in bringing this podcast together. It remains a challenging time for everyone, but a challenging time with a spin for those of us in child health, because it actually hasn't been that busy at all from a clinical front. What I mean by that is that presentations are almost down universally, and a lot of services have been removed to make way for a potential surge. And if you listen to the Don't Forget the Bubbles webinar on wellbeing, you'll have noticed them talking about some of the guilt that might be associated with watching colleagues in other clinical areas who are actually working increasingly hard, and especially our adult ICU, anaesthetic and some emergency department colleagues are really beginning to see that the brunt of what COVID might bring and what might be happening over the next couple of months. And I think it's okay to feel that way. We are all this in this together, but we might experience it in different ways, and not everyone can be a kind of hyphenated hero. What I mean by that is that not everyone's going to be able to play a significant part all of the time. It might not be for the next couple of days, next couple of weeks, maybe not even a couple of months, but I think everyone will have a contribution to make to that the whole NHS or healthcare system response, or wherever you are in the world. And it's important that people remember that. And I don't think we should feel too guilty, especially if you're in isolation, that you're not able to contribute at this moment in time, because there certainly will be opportunities in the future. So there's a few things that have come up, especially around communication. News reports are starting to come in now of cases of children who perhaps have come to harm because of what appears to be a delayed presentation to services. Now, none of these reports are completely in the public domain, and I think it's really, really important that we make sure we don't jump to conclusions. We don't know specifically as yet what is happening, but there is a real theoretical risk that parents who are afraid to come into hospital because of the implications of catching what is perceived to be a very dangerous virus, or not wanting to overload services, that they don't bring their child or infant or adolescent to hospital when perhaps they should have done. And we have to be really careful around our language. We could unintentionally make parents feel quite guilty about this if we're not careful with how we structure our responses to questions. But also importantly, we could end up criticizing other services if we're not careful with what we say about the route that that family has chosen to take to hospital and how we respond to questions about whether they should have come early or not. Now is not the time to apportion blame. And I think it's important that we are as honest as we possibly can be, but with a bit of forethought as to what the implications of what you are saying may be. And that applies to conversations between ourselves, because parents do listen to communications between healthcare professionals. Organisationally, it continues to be a challenging time. There is a lot to change. There is a lot to do to bring services together. And a while ago, I wrote about the three curses of organisational culture. One of the challenges is that our point of view is often shaped by the environment we work in. As Tim Lewinberg, an Australian royal doctor, says, when I was in the ICU, I criticised ED decisions. When I was in ED, I criticised GP decisions. We only see failings, so we must learn to talk to each other. And I think now is really the time to understand and walk in someone else's shoes. There may be good reasons why people aren't able to do the things that you think they should be able to do. And then the second point is that sometimes we only communicate in a narrative or style that we are comfortable with. It might just be that you're very comfortable with exchanging long text-driven emails or using a WhatsApp group to communicate, but the other service or other person may much prefer a face-to-face conversation. And I think we have to acknowledge that, and we have to work together to make sure that the style with which we communicate, that both parties are able to manage effectively. And then sadly, that the third part is that we implicitly acknowledge sometimes that the status quo is just an acceptable place to be. It's that when we've exhausted all our options, well, okay, let's continue as we are doing. And I think one of the interesting things about the COVID-19 pandemic is that we can't stay where we are. We have to change. And I think that has been a real driver for probably improving some services. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens at the end of the pandemic to how much we maintain some of the improvements that we've made. In relation to vital signs, I'm not sure there's been much new evidence so far on the epidemiology of pediatric COVID, but there are a number of studies that are starting to come to fruition in terms of data collection. The RCPCH have a large audit and service evaluation. They've created a data entry form for all COVID-19 positive patients. That's in the UK, and I'm sure that there are other such systems nationally. And my own organisation, Peruki, is starting to think about how we do this in the emergency department to provide some real-time data about how we can describe the difference, perhaps, between COVID-19 positive and negative patients. Indeed, even if there is such a difference. Again, and I think it is worth flicking back through the evidence summary produced on the Don't Forget the Bubbles website, from Alison Boast, Alistair Munro and Henry Goldstein. And it's been a real pleasure to start working with the RCPCH and colleagues from NHS England, who are going to do a more formal kind of narrative summary of the evidence that is out there. So there's a group of people that are going to be churning through all the data available. But there's a quick executive summary on the Don't Forget the Bubbles website, which answers a number of questions about epidemiology, transmission, clinical features, etc. And that will be updated on a weekly basis. And finally, some of the dilemmas. So one of the things that I've really noticed is, where have all the patients gone? Most emergency departments and assessment units are seeing a huge reduction in presentations and proportionally admissions. Now, national data from the UK shows emergency departments are having 50% less presentations this month as they did in March 2019. So why is this, especially for children? Well, there's a couple of reasons, but we don't really know the precise one yet. So the first might be is that our strict isolation methods at the moment have taken out not just COVID, but they also affect all viruses, so that the diseases that trigger febrile convulsions, that they trigger seizures, that cause minor coughs and colds, febrile illness in infants and neonates, none of these are spreading between children now. And especially with children not being at school, this hotbed of upper respiratory tract infection is just no longer there. And so, as especially paediatric emergency medicine clinicians, we're almost out of a job. The other reason, as I kind of discussed at the beginning of the podcast, is it because parents are holding back at coming to hospital when they normally would have done so? Now, part of this is beneficial. It may well be that parents are beginning to learn that they are able to manage some self-limiting illness at home. And there's a real potential here for a public health message to go out, especially about febrile illness and a bit of breathing difficulty, abdominal pain, gastroenteritis, that actually, as a parent or carer, you can manage simple disease quite easily, and that the natural history of all these diseases is that they just get better. and that we've got a natural experiment now where parents are learning some skills in doing that, and that can only be a good thing. But in amongst that is this real risk that parents won't present when they should do. What interests me is that we've not really had any clear data on this yet. And I think until we can start comparing like for like for this couple of months, this first couple of months of this year compared to the last couple of years, which myself and a number of other colleagues are beginning to start to do, we won't really know what some of the most impactful features are. But I think this is a really important space to watch. There's going to be some great research, there's going to be some great just simple evaluation, simple epidemiology, and I think we're going to learn a lot about what drives attendance to children's emergency care and children's hospitals, and we're going to learn a lot about what we can do in the future to set up really positive messages for parents, carers, and their associated families. Thanks for listening, and I'll be back with you next week.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this podcast from Don't Forget the Bubbles. Remember, you can subscribe to our feed on iTunes and Spotify. Thank you for listening.